I think money eventually like came when viewership was like too big to ignore. And it's like, okay, right. Well, like there's tens of thousands of people or hundreds of thousands of people watching these matches. We should be getting paid. But the truth is like the early days, I think it was a huge grind to pitch sponsors or even like investors that this is a thing.
Welcome to the first ever episode of The Business Behind. I'm your host, Zach Honavar, and today we're sitting down with Blake Robbins. Blake is actually a great friend, a fellow business enthusiast, and one of the original investors in 100 Thieves. His efforts were instrumental in helping Matthew Nachtshade-Haeg, the company's lead talent and CEO, found the company back in 2017. Since then, they've attracted investors such as Scooter Braun and Drake, and actually signed some of the biggest up-and-coming gamers in the world. Without further ado, let's skip the chit-chat and jump right into our conversation. Class is now in session. So I guess if you were to describe esports to your grandmother or to like a five-year-old nephew, how would you describe what esports is?
Well, I think a five-year-old nephew, well, actually, you could probably use the same example for both where it's like, they're both probably playing Candy Crush or like some like mobile game. And it's basically like if the way I view it, at least, is I grew up going to arcades, and I'm sure you did too, mm-hmm. where you would always, or you played Super Smash Bros, or you played one of these games, mm-hmm. and there's always one person who is better than everyone else. And you always wanted to like see, like they thought they were the best like in the world. Like, and I think up until, I forget what year Microsoft Live came out or Xbox Live came out. That was basically like when we were finally like able to see, or like PC gaming was like unlocked, where we're able to see how you compete on a global scale or online. And so esports to my grandma or like a five-year-old is literally just like watching people play video games at the highest level in the same way that you watch sports be played at the highest level, and the way that you would watch football, or like you might play football, but you also want to see the best people in the world play that game. It's very similar for esports. It might sound crazier because of the act of actually watching video games, but I would argue there's just as much skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've chatted about that a little bit, where it's, you know, the same way you go to practice for basketball practice and you're like practicing dribbling or a particular skill. Do you find that people in esports, are they called esports athletes?
Yeah. I obviously there's people that are like, no, they're not athletes. Like, and I think the real, like you would say they're an athlete if you respect like a grandmaster in chess and you believe that they're an athlete or, in that same regard. But I would actually say there's mechanical ability of like actually involved in, and like reflexes involved in this. Whereas maybe in chess, it's not as much that, it's more strategic only. Mm. So there, it's sort of best of both of those elements. And
yeah, I can
see that. I think it's an athlete.
Got it. So these esport athletes, when this first started, was there a particular game that was rising to the top of like who's the best at X? And then that kind of kicked off this craze into multiple games?
Yeah, so there's a bunch of different like origins. I actually like the game I first like really saw the potential in was like Halo, and in the West, like Western side of the world here was Halo was really huge. But before that, it was like StarCraft, and there's always been a really big fighting game community around, or like around Super Smash Bros and Street mm-hmm. Fighter and whatever else. Like that's really where it all started, like the grassroots side of it. And StarCraft and like Halo, I think were like a really big inflection point. But StarCraft is really huge in Korea and Asia, and even to this day they still play it, but it's not as popular as it once was. But those were really sort of like the breaking point, or like the, like people started to actually realize, like when I was in high school, I used to watch Halo, like played competitively. And there was a guy named Walshy who's like sort of like the legend of Halo, almost like the Michael Jordan of Halo. And they played on a team called Final Boss. And like they like won, I think it was like 18 tournaments in a row. And like that to me was like the coolest thing ever. Like I thought these guys were like super pros, and like they were super aspirational to me. I just didn't realize how small of a scale that actually was. in my mind, I was like, oh, these guys are like total like athletes and like huge stars. But like at the timing, like they weren't really as big as I thought they were.
Right. And at the time, were those guys making shit tons of money?
No. It was basically like most of these people were like cramming into like a hotel room in Columbus to like play in like some conference room at like a hotel, you know, like it was very like they were all just doing because they loved it and they wanted to just prove they were the best.
Watch LeBron highlights to get better at picking up his tendencies. Or do you think that as technology evolved, you know, having the platforms made that kind of exponential growth?
I think it's a little bit of both. Is like when Twitch and like, I mean, it was Justin TV back in the day, and then they realized like, okay, we can have Twitch and then YouTube and sort of all of that in one place. Like when those things started to blow up, it was like, okay, gaming content actually performs really, really well. And like PewDiePie and these guys all make a ton of gaming content. And that was basically like at the time more just, hey, we're playing a game. And like it wasn't really around the competitive side. I think the competitive side or esports side of gaming has always sort of been like in the corner. And but it's like it exists and the hardcore fans always loved it. But I think most of what actually happens of like what why people watch is very aspirational in the same way why people watch YouTube. I think for streamers and things like that, like you have Ninja, who a lot of people perceive to be one of the best players at Fortnite, like that is why they're watching, is they're like, okay, like in the same way you would watch LeBron, you wouldn't like, you'd be like, I can't even do that if I tried. And I think it's obviously harder if you don't play the game, but like, I think if you watched Ninja and you played Fortnite, you would be basically saying the exact same thing. You'd be like, that's the equivalent of like dunking on someone. And you're like, what? Like, that's like, I can't comprehend how they're doing that. Which is why I think gaming highlights and these videos do so well is because it's basically like there's a feeling of like, wow, the skill gap actually is really different. I think in your friend example of like the reason why is because you feel like you're so much better or like you're so confident that you're so much better. Whereas in like this scenario, you're watching people that like you're literally like, whoa, like what? I can't even think like that. Like what is happening? Like why are they doing that? And so there's naturally a learning component of it. But I think most of it is just pure entertainment of like, this is just amazing.
Got it. Yeah. So then people start to be able to watch the best in the world.
Yep.
Which I guess makes sense too. I guess that's the equivalent of when I'm watching my friends, it's like if I used to go down to the pickup courts by my house, I wouldn't want to just sit on the sideline and watch a bunch of amateur players watching basketball, but I have no problem tuning into TV and watching the Raptors versus the Nets.
Yeah.
So I guess that's very similar. It's like if you're watching your friend's game, that's not as interesting. But if you're watching the best player in Asia play, you're like, holy shit, this doesn't even make any sense in my mind.
It's like, I think high school basketball actually is a really interesting world right now where it's actually huge on YouTube, where like you have like these kids who are going to get picked up by a D1 school or like they're the top 5-star prospect and whatever else. And like, there's been a movement in that world where people are just basically posting highlights of their games from on the high school level. And we've seen like, it's basically the same equivalent in gaming where like, imagine there's just like some kid in the middle of like Iowa who ends up just being the best Fortnite player. And it's like, holy crap, like this is amazing. Like we're like, we now know that this person exists. Like, I think that's the most interesting part about it all is like the fact that it could be anyone, they can be anywhere. And all they have to do is put it online. And then people are like, whoa, like, is this person cheating? Is this real? Like, like, let's get into a game together with other pros and then see how you do. And they continue to perform well. Like, I think that's a really amazing like aspect of all this, where it's just all digital. They can be anywhere they want. And it's just unlocked where it's like, once they post online, people are paying attention.
Wow.
Like, if it's good enough, people will pay attention.
Got it. So then the streams start pouring in and the money comes from people getting paid off streams initially?
Yeah. So most of like how I think like the initial like groundwork of gaming and the first wave of like gaming influencers where you have like Optic Gaming and FaZe Clan and these guys who sort of like led the way in the early days was really around content and just like building out their personal channels and Yeah, like it was basically they were just treating like we're just going to make money on YouTube or Twitch streams and whatever else.
And was the content always live, or was also content like made and told stories?
Yeah, it was a lot of like there was a fair amount of it that was live, but these guys were grinding like nonstop. Where it was like, okay, we're gonna live stream for like 10 hours, then we're gonna crank out a video on the side as like the five of us. And I think that's because they didn't have like investors or anything like that. It was just like, hey, if we need to just like make as much money as we can, we have no idea what's happening with like YouTube or Twitch or anything else. Like they're paying us and we love this job, so let's just see what happens.
How did the formation of teams come about? Because from my understanding, I guess it depends on what you're playing, but it's usually like a one person stick all kind of scenario.
Yeah. So it depends on the game, basically. Like there's at the highest level, like I guess, yeah, taking a step back, like for esports, there's sort of like a tier one, tier two, tier three esports, which is basically like the same, like the equivalent of like tier one sports, where it's like basketball, football, and whatever else. And like you go lower, then it's like lacrosse or something. Sure. There's in esports, the biggest games are League of Legends, Dota, Counter-Strike, Fortnite, maybe Call of Duty, depending on who you ask. And like those are all team-based. Those are all like 4v4 or 5v5 games. Mm. And it's basically the equivalent of a basketball where they play like specific roles.
Positions, almost.
And Fortnite is like, can be solo and duo and whatever else, but they're sort of in a different world because they haven't put as much time into like building out a team structure or like pushing towards teams. It's been much more like, hey, let's just have like a random kid in Iowa like end up becoming like this like a huge star. And so it's, I actually think of like Fortnite is closer to golf. And like you're just like doing a bunch of these side tournaments, and there's individuals that maybe consistently perform or they just break through, and it's like, okay, wow, like who is this person?
Yeah.
Whereas like these other ones are much closer to like basketball and football and wherever else, where you have a set team, you have a set position that you play and role, and like you have to really do a ton of teamwork. Like League is like so much teamwork, and it's basically like in my mind, it's like watching like people perform like gymnastics all together. Like, you know, like it's like it's amazing how coordinated they are. And it's it's really insane to watch.
And it all happens remotely for the most part.
So at the professional level, at the highest level, let's say, most of these players are all together living in a house or apartments, and then they're all practicing in one specific spot as a team. They're doing scrimmages against other teams within their region that are also at the highest level for, I don't know, let's say they're doing 5 to 10 hours of scrimmages a day. And then on top of that, they then practice on their own against everyone online, probably 3 or 4 hours a day as well.
Wow.
And so like the team side, they're playing all together typically in one. You can play League of Legends online as a solo or a duo at like the highest level. And so like you could just queue up with another person on your team, which is what sometimes happens. But a lot of these guys are just like, okay, well, I'm going to like go get food and then I'm going to just grind for like 3 hours and like go on my own. But it's definitely the equivalent of like, you're going to play a practice game and like for basketball, and then you're going to go around and shoot around after. It's like the way I would view it.
Got it. And then like some players like, we'll get in and do extra hours, and some players will go out and party and
all
the rest of it. There's still the same
personality
traits that can get you better or worse.
For sure. Yeah.
And then do you recall the first brand you saw that got involved with this industry?
Interesting. My first memory of this entire space is Dr. Pepper. they were involved with Halo way back in the day, and they actually put a professional player, his name was T-Squared, on like, I think it's like over 1 million bottles of Dr. Pepper, like his face.
Wow.
And it was like a part of like one of their sports series and whatever else. So I think like Dr. Pepper, and probably other than that, like Red Bull has been super early to all of this. And Red Bull, it makes a ton of sense. Like they love just not traditional sports.
Yeah.
And like this is a very obvious sort of extension for them. It's obviously not a extreme sport and like where you would typically associate like a Monster or a Red Bull, but it's still people that like are totally that audience.
Right. And it when you're watching someone stream or like play something, and it's whether it's live streamed or it's pre-recorded, yeah. are you just watching the game or are you also seeing them? Like, are there kids sitting and being like, you're not only watching them play on the screen, but they're also sitting with a Dr. Pepper next to them and like,
yeah. So, I mean, like most games, they play with like a face camera in like the corner of like,
okay. So you can see their reactions to stuff.
Yeah. And some streamers have even taken it to the extreme where, they put another camera on their mouse and keyboard so you can see how fast their reaction times or how fast they're moving and typing.
It's like slow-mo.
It would be like, I'm trying to think of like a sports equivalent, but it's basically like having just a camera on someone swinging just the golf club versus like anything else.
And,
it's pretty interesting. Like, and it's basically like a flex of just like, okay, wow, they're really good at what they're doing. And then like, some of the best players literally just don't even play with like any camera, and they're just like playing just the game because their content isn't entertaining enough like without it. But at the pro level, they have face cameras above all the like TVs that they're monitors that they're playing on.
What's the biggest platform for esports streaming right now, or esports videos in general right now?
Videos for sure, YouTube. Streaming. It's depending on who you ask. I think Twitch is like the leader in North America and the West. I think YouTube and other platforms thrive globally. But I think like in Asia, there's a bunch of different other platforms that really crush. But Twitch in North America has become like a really big part of it. And I don't know if you've ever used Twitch, but like chat on Twitch is like a huge sort of movement where like you feel like, I would love to watch every sports game on Twitch because like chat is just hilarious and like it adds like a really interesting component where like they're just memeing and like in the chat or like they're like calling out one thing that everyone watched and saw and like no one like normally when you experience those things, like you're like, oh, did I just see that? Like, did that just happen? But like then when you have like thousands of people typing the same thing, you're like, whoa, okay, that did happen. and like, I think that's just a really cool experience. And, that's sort of like the real like secret sauce of Twitch, in my opinion. YouTube has chat, but I don't think it's replicated that experience to the level that they have on Twitch.
I guess that's kind of like going to a live game where everyone sees like, did you just see that play? That's crazy. And you know, everyone around you is watching the same game you are.
Yep, exactly. And there is definitely like esports is actually in a really interesting moment right now where some games, like some of the tier one sports, or esports are pushing towards local markets and arenas and doing a ton of that. Whereas like League of Legends has basically said like, they have an arena here in Santa Monica and they will basically say like, okay, we'll keep this here. And then we'll do like one major tournament for the finals of playoffs. And we'll have that in a specific place around North America. Like last year was in Detroit. This year, this next one's in Frisco, Texas. And like, they basically like do it all over and they'll sell out. Like they like in those markets, people come in. But like these local market ones where you're playing your regular season game and you're actually traveling and going to these specific spots is going to be a really interesting sort of test for esports.
What are the costs associated with being an esports athlete? Especially even from, let's say, when you're starting out and you're trying to become the Michael Jordan. And what are the costs you incur other than like buying the console, buying the game?
Yeah. Interesting. Like as far as just like what they're investing in like personally or like.
Yeah. Cause I think like esports, becoming an esports athlete is becoming one of the most aspirational careers in the world. Yeah. And you know, when people want to become a YouTuber, it's like, okay, well you got to either pay for an editor or you got to learn how to edit. You got to pay for camera equipment.
Yeah.
And you got to pay for whatever you're doing in your video.
Yeah.
Same thing with becoming a musician. You're like, okay, well if you can't engineer, you got to pay for an engineer. Yeah. You got to pay for studio time. So the cost incurred of becoming very successful in these industries is actually quite a bit.
Yeah.
Is that the same in esports?
I think in esports, basically like assuming that you get like the minimum of like a decent mouse, a decent keyboard, and a PC that or console that can run that game smoothly, that's basically your cost. I think and that's really like I think what makes it so interesting is that if like you believe that those frictions will continue to go even lower and these costs will even become even cheaper. Like you can play League on like a pretty bad laptop. And like, as long as you have a mouse, like you're good and you can play. I think, and like we had a player on 100 Thieves that was like from Vietnam and like, they like he played like with like a $1 mouse. It was like hilarious. He like sent us a link like, hey, like this is what I want when we get there. And like, and he's considered one of the best players in the world. And it's like, okay, like that, and it just proves like that in and of itself is not like a real issue. I think like to expand on it even more, the reason why I think esports will be so huge and gaming is like competitive gaming is so huge is that unlike, well, I guess YouTube is similar in this regard as well, where you can have an immediate feedback loop of like, okay, if I post this video and no one watches it, and then like, why did that happen? But in gaming, it's the equivalent is like you're actually able to play a match. You're able to play your pickup basketball game. You're able to see what the level of people you were playing against were. And then you were able to see like how you actually specifically did, like with so much analytics of like how much damage did you do? What was your participation in the total amount of team fights? Like, you know, like those very, really small things. But like that's free. That's given to you. Like you can do whatever you want with that. And you're given that feedback loop every single time and you can really see progression. And so I think there's basically like a total, for better or worse, a total myth within esports that like if you have unlimited time, then you can become a professional player. Like I think most people believe that they can become the best player at League of Legends or the best 2K player or FIFA player if they can just play all day. Like there's like tons of people that I talk to who are like, yeah, if I had like as much time as Ninja, I'd be as good as him at Fortnite, you know? And like, I like, obviously that's not true, but like, it's actually great that people think that because like that ultimately means that they're going to be playing these games and like, they feel like they're closer to these people. And that just like ultimately feeds the entire funnel.
We chatted about this before, but I don't remember your answer. I mean, when I was growing up, I wanted to be in the NBA and I realized really quickly that I'm 5'7" white Canadian and that genetically maybe God didn't have that planned for me. And, you know, I wasn't 6'8" and freakishly athletic. Do you think that the same genetic dispositions are either helping or handicapping esports players from becoming professionals and becoming the best in the world?
It's hard to know. There's definitely like a reflex element. Actions per minute is like a real like stat that people keep track of, like how fast you can click buttons and click around and whatever else. I think it's actually like comprehension of vision like is really high. But it's really hard to know if these things are like genetic or if you can train those muscles at an earlier age. Like if you played a bunch of video games starting really young, would you be able to like comprehend the screen better? Like, because there is a lot of information that they're processing. And and I think in like League of Legends specifically, most of that game at the highest level, you assume that they get pretty close in terms of skill. There's obviously going to be some people that are anomalies and better than others by like a long shot. But if they get pretty close in skill, and then the real like ability to win is through both strategy and comprehension of where things are at in the game. So like you're basically, it's all information gathering and understanding what the like and predicting what the other team is doing. And you're trying to basically like always think like 8 steps ahead. Like if I walk into this area, or like, is it likely that they're going to be there? They're doing those real time calculations of like, okay, we should move there. And like to go even deeper in League of Legends, you have cooldowns. So each time you use let's say you punch someone, and as an example, you can't do that again for another 5 seconds. And these pro players are actually keeping track of, okay, he just punched me. He can't do anything for another 5 seconds. That's our time that we have to jump in. And so like all five of them are on a mic and they're screaming like, this is our time. Like they're all on cooldowns. Like we need to fight. Like they didn't kill us with their punch. Like now we need to go. And like, that's insane. Like that they're able to comprehend that. Like I've probably played 1,000+ hours of League of Legends and I literally can't tell you a single abilities cooldown or when someone like that's down for 8 seconds, we're good. Like, you know, like I understand that certain ones are longer cooldowns, but the way that they're keeping track of things and in real time while also playing the game at the highest level is I can't comprehend it.
I mean, just saying that reminds me of, and like, obviously, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, but I remember him talking about reading the referee handbook and talking about he knew where the referees were supposed to be stationed on a given play. And he knew, depending on where he was on the court, he would remember that and be like, oh, I can get away with like a jersey hold here. Or I can get away with like an elbow here. And so it was like that level of granular look at the game was insane, even at a pro level. But it sounds very similar.
Like there's basketball IQ, and then there's pure like skill and mechanical abilities as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the same in League of Legends, where like it's hard to know if any of that is truly genetic, though. Or like, and I think like it's easy to say it's not genetic, because like, you definitely don't have to be like 7 feet tall, right? Yes. Like to do this. So like the people that are playing this they look like you and I, like, you know, and they're all over the place, and they're just like popping up out of nowhere.
But I imagine as time goes on and becoming a professional esports gamer becomes more lucrative, why not start testing, you know, a kid at 6 years old and being like, who has the fastest reaction time here? And like, if you just put in your 10,000 hours, you're actually, or like even testing like, hey, if we put you through these reaction practices, do you get better? You don't. And then kind of going from there. And
I always joke like they should do IQ tests for gamers to just see like where they reach out like on a benchmark of other sports.
Yeah.
Because I actually think like my hunch is that it will be higher because of just the information comprehension, like how much they have to actually like keep track of. And so much strategy. But I think it's probably pretty close to a quarterback in football, where like the amount of information they're processing, the amount of like they're reading the field at all times, and they're like, okay, that's my opportunity. Wow. It's very similar to that, but that's all five players are doing that in any
game. Yeah, very opposite to like the stereotype of the dumb jock.
Exactly.
But also, I think the quarterback is a very good example or comparison, because it's like that's usually the person on the team that has the highest IQ, like the point guard in basketball.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all, the problem is they're all making plays. They're all thinking about like opportunities to make plays, and it's really hard. And I think the other side of it all is they're doing this mainly, they're practicing. It's basically like, imagine playing basketball, but only pick up basketball your entire life. And then you get to like the highest level of pickup basketball. So not even AAU, you're just the king of your court at like your local YMCA or something. And then you're like, okay, like I'm really good. I'm going to go play like professional basketball. You're skipping AAU, you're skipping college basketball, and you're just going and playing professional basketball. You've never played on a team, like a real team before. You've never had a coach. And now you're basically like, okay, like I'm really good at my individual role. I think I know how to play the game perfectly. Mm. And then you get on a team and everyone has crazy differing opinions. They all maybe know how to play on a team. You don't. And like, that's where esports is at right now, especially League of Legends, where you're playing mainly in your home by yourself, maybe with one other person your entire time that you're playing the game. And then you're thrown into an environment where it's like, okay, now you're playing with five people. And like, you probably have never even played in that environment before, like where you can communicate with all five people. Because the way League of Legends sets it up is you're actually only able to use voice chat with the person that you play with.
Wow.
And so otherwise, it's a very like, you're just playing by yourself and you're typing. Because it can get so toxic and people can be so like rude. And trust me, they can be pretty bad on because people take it really seriously, and like when they lose or like they feel like someone is throwing the game, there's tons of psychology behind like all of that. But I remember talking to someone, they're like, all it takes is like one person having a bad day, and like that leads to like literally 1,000 people having bad games, like because like it's like that one person having a bad day goes into like a game and they just start like flaming everyone about whatever, then it's like, okay, well, like now everyone else in that game is ruined. And like now they're like, oh shit, I'm going to go ruin someone else's game. Yeah. Like, and so like it just continues to compound, and like it's really hard to counteract that. And that just goes back to like internet culture in general and like YouTube comments even, right? Like,
for sure.
Like where you have like one person that says something negative and then everyone just starts saying negative stuff.
Wow. So kindness is very much needed in esports.
Yes, for sure.
And I think just the same way NBA has now made it mandatory for every team to have a mental health coach, I imagine that might already be a thing. If not, will very soon become a thing in esports.
Yeah, it definitely should, is basically like where things are at. I think the even crazier component of all this is these pro players stream, they make YouTube videos, and they read Reddit in the same, or like Reddit and Twitter in the same way that we do, because they just grew up on the internet, you know, like they're gamers that grew up on the internet. Mm-hmm. And when they're streaming, like imagine like LeBron goes home and he just like is like streaming his basketball, like him doing a shoot around, and teams that you played against that like hate LeBron or like LeBron haters are able to go into his chat and just be like, you're terrible, you're trash. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So happy you lost yesterday.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Thankfully we don't see it like that extreme and that common, but it's definitely like, wow, that player sucks. Or like, and you see it on Reddit and it's like, wow, that player sucks. And NBA and other sports definitely have it, but it feels like there's a layer of like connectivity and like mm-hmm. relatability with these players. Mm-hmm. Like these players let down their guard and let you build a relationship with them through Twitch and YouTube in the same way like Yes Siri lets you feel like you know them. And so like people feel much more comfortable being way harsher with them.
Yeah.
And that is like so petrifying to me because it's like these players, like they're obviously doing their best, you know, and obviously they want to win and like they're being told like, I don't know, you suck. Like you shouldn't have played that. You shouldn't have done that. Yeah, and like it haunts them, like for sure. Like I'm sure most of them would actually say it doesn't impact them or they stay off it, whatever, but like you can't.
Yeah. It's, we're all human.
Yeah, exactly.
Got it. To go back to the business here, obviously just money from these streaming platforms and money to like wear something or drink Dr. Pepper on the side isn't paying for 7-8-figure facilities. Where do you think the real money within esports is kind of found?
Yeah, so from esports as an industry has probably existed, let's say, like a decade or two. Like in competitive gaming has just basically exist. I think like over the past 5 years, we've seen like a real movement towards a ton of investment in venture capitalists, private equity, individual high net worths, all starting to enter into space. And that all basically came from an inflection point where the biggest game publishers or developers in space were like, you know what? We're actually going to try and run these leagues at like a professional level with like real structure. We're going to set it up like an NBA or an NFL, where NBA is technically owned by all of the teams, plus the NBA as a body is like one of the votes and whatever else. And they do a rev share with all of that.
Got it.
In League of Legends, like, or let's say Overwatch, the difference is these games existed and were popular before. And they were basically like, we're never going to give any of that money that we're seeing from these games to these teams. And so it's like, okay, well, like, what are that? How does the economics actually make sense? Why would I ever buy a team? And like, why would I continue to invest in these players' salaries and whatever else?
Right.
And League of Legends had a North American league called NALCS. And they basically were like, it was literally just people like hoping that this would happen one day where Riot, who owns League of Legends, would be like, hey, we're actually going to do a revenue share within this circle where when we get league-wide sponsors, we'll do a kickback between or whatever. And like we'll start to actually unlock these opportunities of like if we get a broadcast deal for it, then like we can give exposure to of some extent of that deal to the teams.
And which the teams have to be approved by the League of Legends.
Yeah, so for League of Legends, it was like they basically announced it. And then it was like, okay, well, are they going to favor the teams that were already in it who, like, we've been grinding it out and, like, like basically paying for, like, no upside in theory?
Right.
Like, they were just, like, hoping to break even with sponsors and whatever else. Or is it, like, are they going to let new teams in? And what does that look like to get in? And so Riot basically, like, put out a post and they're like, hey, here's like what we're thinking about doing. The community was like, what's happening? Like, are we going to lose like our favorite teams? Like, are we going to lose our favorite players? And then it was like, okay, well, this is the only way like we're going to push this into like an NFL or NBA level. And the way like that we need like real infrastructure, like, because before it was also like shady, like the teams maybe weren't paying on time because there wasn't a ton of like pressure to, and it was also they probably couldn't, you know, because they didn't have any economics. And so when Riot and then Overwatch League is the other big one, which is owned by Activision Blizzard, like they both actually at the same time were like, hey, we're going to sell these spots. You have to pay like an upfront fee, like between, I think like League of Legends was like 10 to 15 million or something in that range. And then Overwatch League, I think, was like 20 to 25 million. And
to get your team as part of the league.
Yes. And it was basically you're saying, we now are one of the permanent teams within this league, in this region. And that was like a big, like, it'd be the equivalent of like NBA opening up, like saying like, hey.
Who wants to make an NBA team?
Yeah. And who wants to have the like the first 10 permanent spots within the NBA?
Okay.
And so obviously it's like, oh shit. Okay. Like now people are going to start paying attention because they're like, I really want to be a part of that. And so at that point, basically every team that was existing within it was like, okay, well, we're going to get in. We're going to find like the best investors. We're going to put together the best strategy. Mm-hmm. And for better or worse, like probably for better, like their track record was held against them in some ways of like, what did they do previously?
Right.
Like, did they treat the players well? Like not like performance, but more just like, were they good at brand building and whatever else? And so, and then there were some that like, they couldn't raise money just because of like, there was other teams that weren't able to swoop up and try and go
and
after
get
this.
Them. Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, that was the real inflection point for all of it. And then, people raised a bunch of money, and Riot did a really thorough interview process with every single team. I don't know how many teams they've never told us publicly or us privately how many teams they ended up actually interviewing.
Yeah.
But we had to put together, I mean, our application was probably 90 to 100 pages.
And teams, unlike in this scenario, every game has its own league technically.
Yes.
So every game has its own NBA.
Yes.
And a team like 100 Thieves has multiple teams and multiple leagues.
Yeah. So the difference is like, it's basically college sports. It's like how it like where like one team or one brand plays across multiple games.
Or like a city, right? City, like the Los Angeles Kings, the Los Angeles Lakers.
Yeah. The difference is like, it would be like the Lakers were the same name for the like, for
every
football
sport.
And basketball and whatever else. And so the problem or good thing, depending on who you are, is like not every game, it's literally only Overwatch, League of Legends, and Call of Duty this year were the only games that have basically said we're going to do a franchise league where you buy a permanent spot and we're going to share some exposure of the upside with you.
Got it.
All the other leagues still operate in the same way that they used to a decade ago, where it's like, prize earnings and like you have to, like there's relegation, like you can lose your spot, you're like you cannot get invited to tournaments, like you have to it's way riskier in theory because you don't have such a clear path to like hey,
nothing's confirmed,
yeah, like and so you're investing a ton to be like, well, I don't want to be a bottom feeding team that like no one cares about, because like in like Counter-Strike is like probably 100 plus teams that play like the highest level. And if you don't continue to invest or get the best team, then you're not going to get invited to tournaments. And like, you're just going to fall into like, basically like, okay, you're just like a random side team that like exists. They have a team, but like, are they actually good?
For these leagues, like let's even talk about just League of Legends, is our team structured similarly to an NBA where there's like a GM, there's, you know, these people that are not like, or is it just like one head and then a bunch of players?
Yeah. So when we did the application, one of the questions was basically like, how are you going to set this up? Like, how are you going to like build infrastructure? Because like when League of Legends was first started played in North America, it was like just five guys playing by themselves or like, you know, like thrown into a room and like, you know, like it's like maybe like someone's like checking on them, like that they're getting food and whatever else. But it was like, there's no structure. Like it was basically like you do whatever you want. And then over time, it was like, maybe we should get a coach. Like what would a coach look like in this? And coaches end up being really valuable because like there's elements of the game where coaches can actually directly impact at the beginning of the game,
right?
Like who are you going to pick? And like all of that strategy is sure. Like basically lifted from the players before. And now it's like, okay, now you're going to handle that aspect of the game.
Love it.
Then like after franchising and maybe a little bit before, there was maybe one or two teams that started to do like positional coaches. So it'd be like, hey, you're the quarterback coach, you know, like, and like maybe someone who was really good in that position, or it's like they were
specialty
like,
coaches.
Yeah. And they're just going in and helping in that specific role.
Wow.
Then there's like mental coaches, and then there's strategic coaches, and like, there's assistant coaches. Like, in the case of like 100 Thieves, like there's a GM, a head coach, a strategic coach, like several analysts who are scouting, and then That's just the main team. And then there's an academy team, which is basically like the junior team.
Like the D League.
Yeah. Of like, this is a feeder into the hope of like making it onto the main team. Yeah.
And so there's talent scouts, just like there are in the NBA and just like there are in like, I guess soccer or football is a
good
comparison.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's probably closest to like Man United having like a youth team, you know?
Exactly.
And so those play that actually in a league as well. And so like that's televised or broadcast on Twitch. Does pretty well. And like, it's actually pretty insane. Like it will average like 30,000-40,000 viewers.
Wow.
And then, on top of that, we actually like 100 Thieves invested even lower. So we technically have three League of Legends team. We have, the main team, we have an academy team, and then we have like an actual youth team, which is like, you can't play League of Legends at a professional level, before 18, in the US.
Right.
And so we have a team of five that are all like 16 and 17
year old,
like kids that are.
Are they allowed to make money?
They, with their parents' consent, yeah. Like, nice. So like,
so it's better than the NCAA.
Yeah, so like they're like paid like a salary and right, whatever good. Else, and like it's like giving them an opportunity to like prove themselves, to either make it onto the academy team one day, or maybe if they're really good, then it's like okay, you're gonna be like. No, on the main team right off the bat.
And these players have managers, like, and like sports have agents, right? Yeah. So like if you have a friend that's super good at League of Legends, you can be like, dude, I'm not good, but I understand business.
Yeah.
Let me manage you or let me be your agent. And then, you know, I'll have a conversation with the head of 100 Thieves to be like, oh, you want to sign my boy, whatever? Okay, cool. Well, here's the terms. And now we're getting into a contract negotiation. Yeah. Are the contract negotiations similar to sport?
Yeah, I mean, so it got really interesting. But basically, like the moment that like these leagues were like, "Hey, we're gonna be real," it's like, okay, well, that means the agents are gonna come into the picture as well, right?
Like,
and managers are like, well, like if it's gonna be real, then like let us be real as well. And like, I'm actually all for it. Like, I want these people to be represented and like actually understand what they're signing. Like, right? Like that's like the worst case scenario is you're just like, hey, like sign this, and they're like. Oh, I didn't realize I gave up that right or whatever it might be, or that's the expectations of me. And so like that's, it's definitely happened. And there's tons of like that have flooded into the space. Like you have WME and UCA like repping some players. And then there's like individual agencies that have popped up specifically for esports and like specific games. There's like agents that are known within that space. But like there's probably 10 or 15 agents that like I know that rep almost all of the League of Legends players in North America.
Wow.
And or like and then Call of Duty and whatever else. Like they all crush. They're doing great. And like they're helping make sure that these players are getting what they deserve.
Yeah, that's amazing. I have a friend, shout out to Cody, who manages a bunch of I want to say Call of Duty players, and he just like started his own management company similar to me from Toronto.
Yep.
And is helping young players that he believes in from a gaming perspective, like, okay, you can reach this level of success. That's crazy. And then so these league-wide endorsements are happening, and then those trickle down to players. And do players have all the freedom in the world to go out and find their own endorsement deals like a LeBron James goes to Nike?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like they do to some extent. It's basically like for a team, right, there might be like categories that are like, hey, like for 100 Thieves, like there's a drink sponsor, and so it's like, okay, well, can you get a directly conflicting one or whatever that might be? And so there's definitely those dynamics, but it's very similar in the same way that like a professional basketball team also would be like, hey, you actually can't get like a direct sponsor that's conflicting with that.
That makes a lot of sense too. That's like J.R. Smith wearing his Supreme armband and then being like, you can't rep Supreme while you're playing in the NBA.
Yeah, exactly. And that's because of league sponsors and whatever else. Correct. And so like, you'll have to pay a fine or you'll be like penalized or whatever it might be. And so like, those are all, that's where this is heading, where it's like, there are specific categories or there's specific sponsors that you can play in. But like, I think of in this world, the equivalent of shoe deals and things like that are like keyboards and mice and and headsets. Like, you know, like those are their like ultimate things that they can flex with or show like that they're good at. And like Razer and HyperX, and like these guys all are doing really well.
Have any esports athletes started to create their own lines of keyboards, mouses, and stuff? Just like, you know, Jordan did it in collaboration with Nike, but he came out with the Jordans.
Yeah.
So are there like the Ninja 5s coming out or the Ninja 1s coming out?
There's Ninja did a partnership with a mouse brand called Final Mouse. And like there's now regarded one of the best mouses for Fortnite. That's probably the first real step we've seen in that direction. There's a team out of Europe called Fnatic, which actually makes their own specific like keyboards and mouses and whatever else for people in the space. Like, this is what we use. You should use it as well, which isn't like, but the crazy thing is that we are in a spot where all of this is so young and every team, every player, everyone is basically, every league is just trying to figure out what is the best way to like guide us all. And like, what is the best way for us to get to profitability or make this a real big business? And I think we're at a point now where every team is basically taking like within specific lanes. It's like, we're going to focus on being like pure championship winning team. We're not going to invest in content or anything else. We're just going to get the best players. Then it's like, we're going to invest in content. And then we're going to invest only in apparel. Like, you know, like there's all these different lanes that each of these, or like in that team's example, Fnatic, like they're basically like, hey, we're going to invest in gear and we're going to make keyboards and mouses that we can sell rather than just specifically our own merchandise.
Which is again, like, since we've been comparing everything to basketball, is like, you know, when Mark Cuban takes over the Mavericks, he's like, hey, I'm going to invest a shit ton in the experience of the fans. And like, I'm still going to try to get the best players and try to win a championship, which he did, but it came at his own strategic kind of route to get there. What would you say, if you can speak on it, what is 100 Thieves approach to this?
Yeah, I think winning is like the baseline for any team that wants to build a real lasting brand or legacy within the space. It's like, you need to win. Like, like that's first and foremost. Like, nothing else sort of works.
Unless you win. Yeah, your content doesn't matter. No one wants to watch it if you're like the bottom of the league.
Yes, exactly. And so like, winning is number one goal.
Yeah.
Like that's like 100% we need to win. And then I think past that, it's like, let's actually, like, given that gaming is so native, let's give people like the ability to relate and be personable and get a look behind the scenes. I think 100 Thieves specifically has a really unique edge because Nadeshot is a big YouTuber and personality within the space where like, he's trained and understands like, hey, this is what I do behind the scenes. Like, people want to see that and they want to like experience what it is as an evolution of like what happens when a player then goes and owns team and runs that team.
Yeah.
And so that's been really awesome on the content side. Mm-hmm. And then it's also like, how do we actually build like a true lifestyle brand or an aspirational brand? Like, I think aspiration is the ultimate thing for every one of these, like even the Lakers, right? Like, why do you want to play for the Lakers one day? It's like, I want to be like these people and like this dynasty and legacy that they have as like, there's no higher honor, right? And like, I think the dream is like, you want to have players one day that are like, I want to play for 100 Thieves because that is the best org in the world, you know? And and then like that becomes, I think that's amazing. And then, so apparel tries to line up very closely with that where it's like, let's actually build a real like aspirational brand where it's like, hey, this is streetwear. This is really cool. And it's like, even if you like get that, then like, and you're like a part of an exclusive group within that fan, which is very different than the Lakers, who has their stuff always available, right? And it's like, you can buy as much as you want. And like, we just want as many people wearing it as possible.
Correct.
Which we're taking a different approach where it's like, you know what, we're actually in theory capping the number of people that can have that. Mm. And there's tons of pros and cons for all of those things.
Correct.
But it's the strategy that has been opted for in this case because of like how important brand and like the connection to that brand is.
Right. And scarcity as a driving force to value something rather than it becoming a commodity because it's easily accessible. I think especially to the demographic that caters towards gamers, they like want what no one else can get and they want things that are rare. And I mean, that's like the thing in gaming is like, do you have that thing that no one else has that's super rare?
And I think like you look back at Supreme or these brands within those worlds, most of that started around like skating and like that whole culture. I think there's a very equivalent culture within like video games right now where it's like, okay, like how do you build a really amazing brand around sort of like, I don't know, like this anti-culture within that space, you know, and there's a clear path of like, okay, like maybe for like skating, it was like, okay, you could have worn like Birdhouse or whatever these other big brands were. But it's like, okay, what are the coolest and like best people what's in that world wearing? And
got it.
Yeah.
To go back to the contracts within a league, if a player signs to 100 Thieves, they're getting like a salary, like an NBA player gets a salary.
Yep.
And then from my understanding of the NBA, it's like if you get to the playoffs, you get a bonus. If you get to the second round, you get a bonus. If you get to the playoffs, if you win MVP, you get a bonus. There are all these like performance bonuses. Is it similar in esports?
So it varies depending on the team and the game. Like, there's one game that I haven't really talked a ton about, but it's called Dota, which is like basically a competitor to League of Legends in some ways. They've opted for a completely free, like an open ecosystem. And they're owned by the same company that owns Counter-Strike. And so like they both have a very similar ecosystem where it's like hundreds of teams, like you're not guaranteed to get invited to tournaments or whatever else. And like, you're just playing open circuits. In that world, Dota actually has a big tournament, like basically like the equivalent of like the Super Bowl, let's say.
Or March Madness,
called the International. And they actually let the community like essentially donate to the prize pool. And so the game itself optimizes like, hey, if you buy this, then we'll donate X percentage to this prize pool to contribute. I forget the exact number for last year, but I think it was north of like $18 million or $20 million for the prize pool. And the way that it works is like the winning team gets like 50% of that basically. And you're a team of five. And so like you have kids walking away or people walking away with $2.5 million when they win, you know? And so in that world, it's like, okay, well, if I'm a professional player and I'm going to win that, I want to make sure I have like total, like I'm structuring my contract to like have a much higher percentage of that like earnings,
that pot,
and maybe take a lower salary because of that. And so like there's tons of mechanisms for negotiations within each ecosystem, but definitely within the league, like there's tons of players that are just like, I want to like get, if I get MVP, I want a bonus, or if I want, or if I get the playoffs. But then there's some people who are like, no, like I just want it all up front. You know? And so I think it really depends on
the contracts are malleable at this point. And so it is actually very important to have a good manager or a good agent repping you.
Yes.
As in all things.
Yes.
No bias.
For obviously. Sure. No. I think in general, like you should have someone that understands the space or your worth relative to what you're getting paid and or whatever you're being rewarded. And so like I think that's always good. I actually think like normal people who work corporate jobs should have agents. Like I think like it's insane that there isn't a world where like you're able to basically get like a true gut check on like what your worth is. Is that a good deal or is that a bad deal for me? Or should I go and explore other things?
Wow. Maybe I should just start managing friends of mine.
I'm serious. Like I think there's just like, it's weird to think about, but like, I think it's actually like I forgot the stat, but it's like, if you stay at a job for more than like 5 years, then you're basically guaranteed to be underpaid. Like because like there's no incentive to continue to like increase your salary. It's like, okay, they're here for 5 years. Like, okay, like we'll do like incremental, but like if you went and explored, then you probably could get more.
Got it.
So like, I think that side of it is all going to come to fruition as well.
What do you think is a trend or what is like a big thing that you would predict happens within esports that maybe a lot of people, that's like a hot take, quote unquote, which is like maybe a lot of people don't see eye to eye with you, or it's like kind of an out there thought?
Oh, man. I think local leagues will fail. Like I think like professional leagues that optimize for home and away games within regionalization will fail until like you basically need to prove that your game has fans in all of those areas and those teams have enough fans. Like I think there's a world where it could work for maybe one or two games, but I think on a large scale it's a pretty like bad take to do. And I think like we will see pretty bad ripple effects of that as well. Like in Overwatch League, they're doing regionalization this year where they're traveling basically to specific cities each I don't know, like every 2 weeks or something like that. And I think they're traveling, someone did the math and it's like they're traveling twice as many miles as an NBA team travels in a season.
Wow.
Because they actually have to go to like Paris and Shanghai and everywhere else. And they are all traveling like coach, and you know, like they're not like flying on private jets to these places. And I think like burnout is real within the space. Like it's incredibly grueling on the mind already to play these games, but then to throw in a ton of travel and whatever else, I think just really weeds. And then on top of that, like I just don't think enough fans come out within those markets consistently.
So the IRL portion of esports is probably, in your opinion, not as much of an opportunity.
I think that esports is obsessed with becoming the NBA, and I think the NBA is obsessed with becoming like esports. And like in I think that esports needs to lean into the digital side of it far more than it is like it's basically trying to copy and mimic everything that these leagues do, rather than like we actually have hundreds of thousands of people that tune in on Twitch and YouTube. Like, why not continue to like build a better experience for them when the same way the NBA is now starting to like try and invest towards experiences at home and whatever else.
Digitally,
And like all of those digital experiences they're investing millions of dollars into is basically like these leagues are largely ignoring.
Rather than just like building a stadium almost for vanity, just so that you could like we did it.
Yeah, and I think in a lot, like a large reason for that is like they want to be like, and
they want to be taken seriously. Yes. Like the NBA.
Yes.
And they think that having a Staples Center replica for those types of things gets them that.
100%. And I think that like it makes sense because a lot of these team owners are also owners of professional sports teams.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, why don't we just have a facility? Like that's massive. And we have a stadium side of it as well, where like we're going to build out a 10,000 seat arena for people to like play and come and watch. And, and I think like that becomes really crazy and scary. Like, you know, like those are ultimately the biggest cost drivers of these other teams or like in these other leagues. And like that,
if you can avoid that, it's good business.
Yeah. I can assure you that like if like you went to the Lakers tomorrow and they're like, you can get rid of the Staples Center and you could still get as many people watching your games. And like you can literally just play from like this one side shop, like on the side, and you're going to get as many fans. And they're just all going to watch online instead of coming in person. Then they'll probably do it. Like I think like there's certainly live components, and I think the biggest matches should always have live components. But like I think people love watching games from home. Like for me, I actually like some sports like hockey, I would prefer to watch from home. Like, and it's like, okay, like here you go. And like, so I think like that is where things are heading. And I think most people are too obsessed with the past versus thinking about the future.
Wow. I love that. That is a hot take. I think I agree with you. I see I added with you there. If someone, I think everyone or a lot of people listening, if anyone's listening at this point, if you still are, I love you. if people are listening and are intrigued by esports, which many are, and obviously they are if they're still listening, what resources do you think people should dive into to really be able to wrap their heads around this if they like want a job at 100 Thieves and are aspiring to maybe not become the professional gamer, but to get involved in another asset of this industry?
Yeah, I think the truth is like, you have to play these games to understand them, like to understand anything that I basically said. Like you're obviously going to understand like a high level and like, but I think to understand the granularity and appreciate it as a sport, you have to play these games a couple times, like pick a game, whether it's League or Counter-Strike or whatever it might be, or Fortnite. And you'll understand pretty quickly that like there's real skill and there's a real like investment in time and to get better at these games. I think as far as like how to actually learn or get involved in the business side, there's so many ways. I think like that for me, the best signal of like an industry actually going to continue to thrive is people that like come from other industries and want to switch into that world. Like crypto or that world, like I know so many smart people that have like given up really amazing jobs to be like, I'm going to jump into this world.
Smart.
And like, so like, I think like in this specific industry, like I think there needs to be more smart people from other industries, right? Like there needs to be people that are thinking about brand from like not just sports leagues, right? Like it's like, okay, when you do brand at like a big direct consumer company, you should be like thinking about doing it here. Like, or like any of that stuff, I think is appreciated. I think most people in this space are actually probably stale of like, this is just a standard way to do things, or like, this is what people want to do, or this is what everyone, like, again, going back to like, this is the past. And so we're going to like bring what worked in the MBA over to here. And I think you see tons of people that come from MBA or traditional sports teams come into this space. But I think it's more like, if you actually want to get involved, try and present different thoughts and then like
be progressive with the approach
rather
than just copying other industries solely.
Yeah. And I think like in general, like career advice or anything like that is like, don't be afraid to like throw your ideas out there or like even create mock-ups of whatever it is that you want to do. Because I think like people are really nervous about like ideas being unique and whatever else. And I'm like the biggest hater on that ever. Like, I think ideas are like the cheapest thing in the world. I think no one has a unique idea anymore. Like, legitimately, like, I promise you, you are not the only person that has thought of that one concept or idea, but like, it all comes down to execution. Mm-hmm. And I think very few people are willing to execute or like put in the work or in time or to actually go the extra mile. And like, it's so easy to stand out. I can't stress that enough. Like, it's so easy to stand out because people do so little as far as like actually what, like, hey, here's my resume.
Yeah.
And like, I'm interested in this space. I'm like, so, okay, well, like, what do you actually want to do? Like, what can you do? Because I think in this world right now, like, because it is the Wild West and like no one knows necessarily what is a winning strategy, like there isn't necessarily defined roles. Like, sure, there's social and partnerships and whatever else, but it's like you should be thinking about like how to create your own role within this world, because I think no one necessarily knows what the roles and it's like, because again, those are copying the structure of traditional sports teams. It's like, we're gonna have a social team and a partnerships team and whatever else. And it's like, what if you don't need that? Like, right? Like, what is the critical component of that that's missing?
Got it. Almost thinking about it more in terms of problems and aspirations, and then just building something that molds to, you know, reduce the problems, get more of the aspirational goals, not rather thinking of it as like, here's a position and the roles and responsibilities of a head of partnerships is XYZ.
Yeah. And I think it's like, because even head of partnerships, 100 Thieves, like, they didn't come from a traditional sports team. They actually came from Barstool, you know, and they came from a different background where it's like, okay, like they understand the media element of it rather than like, we understand the team, like traditional team selling that side of it. It's like, okay, well, like in 100 Thieves case, we're selling a lot of content and a lot of inventory on that side of it versus like we're selling jersey patches or like stadium rights.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Amazing, dude. And to, I guess to wrap things up, one question that I want to ask you is if you could see or hear an episode on The Business Behind about a particular industry that you're very curious in, what would Blake's industry that you would like to hear is me doing like a similar thing with an expert in that domain be?
Oof. I think for me, like I am very obsessed with like creator driven businesses.
Mm.
And I think there are very few people today that are actually like building real businesses around like creators that they all understand the collective power of them to build something bigger. And so like even an individual level, like you have Emma Chamberlain who like is building her coffee kit and whatever else, like the people behind that, like I think are ultimately the people that are going to have the biggest impact in this entire like basically all of consumer in the future. Like the entire consumer industry is going to change by these people who are forward thinking and understand that distribution through these creators is ultimately key. And so like there's not a cookie cutter answer for like a specific person or area. It's much more like the people that are thinking about turning media businesses to unlock bigger things, like whether that is a Barstool or like in like even you guys, right? Like of how you're thinking about building something bigger than just a media channel. Because ultimately, like the media outlet or like the YouTube channel or the Twitch stream or whatever it is, that's basically just top of funnel eyeballs on whatever you are going to build that's like endemic to who you are or what you guys want to create.
I love it. I love it. Well, there you go. Content creator driven brands coming up in an episode soon. Thank you, Blake, for coming on.
You.
Anything around where people can find you? I know you're active on Twitter a lot.
Yeah. You can just follow me on Twitter at BlakeIR. I'm super active on there for better or worse. So feel free to follow me if you enjoy any of these random musings that I have.
I love it. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Cheers.